I call Senate Resources Committee to order. Today is Monday, April 24th, 2017. Let the record reflect. It is 2 p.m. Committee members present, Vice Chair Senator Coghill, Senator Meyer, Senator Stedman, Senator Von Imhoff, Senator Hughes, and myself, Senator Giesel. Thank you to Ann and Ben, who are helping us out, keeping the records and helping us with the audio. So today, the committee has one item on its agenda. We will take up House Bill 111 again. House Bill 111 was first heard on April 14th. We had two hearings on April 15th. We had two more hearings on April 17th. We had a hearing on April 18th with the Department of Revenue and also follow-up with our legislative consultants. And then on April 19th, we had yet another meeting with our legislative consultant. We have a proposed committee substitute before us. Senator Coghill, may I have a motion?
Sure, Madam Chair.
I move that we take the work order 30-LS0450/PAPA as our working document for the Senate CS for House Bill Number 111.
Thank you. I'll object for purposes of discussion. Committee staff will come to the table. Welcome to Ike Geolopsis, who staffs the Resources Committee, and he will explain the changes, take us through the committee substitute.
Madam Chair, for the record, Ike Geolopsis, staff to Senator Giesel and to the Senate Resources Committee. On committee members' desks are two documents entitled respectively Summary of Senate CS for House Bill 111/PAPA and Sectional Analysis for Senate CS for House Bill 111/PAPA. Madam Chair, on the first document for the summary of the Senate CS, the three elements in this committee substitute are, firstly, the elimination of the refundable tax credits. The committee substitute will eliminate the oil and gas tax credit fund, which was established in 4355028, and any work being done after January 1 of 2018 would no longer be reimbursable through that fund for oil and gas work. The second change, Madam Chair, would be the transition to carry forward losses with the statewide repeal of the net operating loss credit under 4355023B. And as the versions of the bill prior have transitioned the loss carry forward mechanism to a deduction, this committee substitute does that, enabling the taxpayer to recover their full losses. The third miscellaneous item, Madam Chair, is that this committee substitute will expand the time frame for the interest rate for delinquent taxes under 4355 to 6 years, while lowering it to 3% compounded quarterly, and in also doing so, combining the assessment for delinquent taxes under 4355 with all other delinquent taxes under the statutes of 4305. If I can turn, Madam Chair, to the sectional analysis for Senate CS for CS for House Bill 111-PAPA. The first section, Madam Chair, begins on page 1, line 7, and continues to page 2, line 20. And this is the interest rate change to 3% compounded quarterly for delinquent taxes effective January 1 of 2018. The second section, Madam Chair, changes 4320044A, and that is found on page 2, line 21 to line 25. And this states that the credit accrued under 4355025, the Middle Earth credits, as their colloquial term is, can be used as a deduction against that taxpayer's corporate income tax liability, though that function is not transferable. Section 3 is found on page 2, line 26, continuing to page 3, line 1, and that amends 4320046E, and that's the Alaska Net Income Gas Storage Facility Tax Credit. Sections 3, 4, 5, and 6, Madam Chair, all do the same thing for those respective three credits that are cashable that are found in the corporate income tax credit system, the LNG storage facility, the natural gas storage facility, and the oil refinery. Those will remain cashable until their natural expiration, and they're going to be available in their cashability through general appropriation. Section 4 and 5 conform to that. Section 6, Madam Chair, is taking the language that had previously been in the oil and gas tax credit fund in 4355028 and putting that into the income tax statutes for those three credits to have the same provisions of making them applicable through general appropriation. Section 7 is found on page 4, line 16, going through page 4, line 20, and this amends 4355023C, and this enables a taxpayer to apply credits issued under 023 against prior year taxes, interest, penalties, and fees related to the oil and gas production tax, and that includes amended oil and gas production taxes, provided, of course, that the assessment was not subject to an administrative procedural appeal or litigation. Section 8, Madam Chair, can be found on page 4, line 27 through page 5, line 13, and that conforms to the repeal of the oil and gas tax credit fund later in this bill, which is in section 25. Section 9, Madam Chair, is on page 5, line 14, continuing to page 6, line 1, and that amends 4355023E. And like section 7, this also enables a taxpayer to use a transferable credit that had been issued under 4355023 against those prior year taxes with the same limitations. Section 10, Madam Chair, can be found on page 6, line 2 to page 6 of line 8. And that adds a new subsection to 4355024. And that states that tax credits under 4355024C, the small producer credit, and 4355024I, that's the per barrel credit for new oil, they could be used to reduce the taxpayer's liability below the minimum but not below zero, including a year in which the sliding scale credit, which is found under 4355024J, is used, and the taxpayer can decide the ordering of those credits when calculating their tax liability. Section 11 is on page 6, line 9, continuing to the end of page 6, line 31, and that amends 4355025A, and that's the tax credit found in the Middle Earth statutes, conforming to their ability to use a credit accrued under those statutes against that taxpayer's income tax liability. Section 12 is found on page 7, line 1, continuing to page 9, line 16. This amends 4355025F. This allows those same provisions of deductibility against corporate income tax for a taxpayer that has earned it under 4355025, and it also directs the Department of Revenue to grant or deny a credit application under 025 within 120 days within receipt of that application. Section 13, Madam Chair, can be found on page 9, line 17, continuing to page 9, line 31. This amends AS 35025H, and this is the explicit provision that a taxpayer can use credits issued under 025 against prior year tax interest, penalties, and fees, similar to the same language allowed for a transferable credit issued under 4355023 and subject to the same limitations, litigation, appeal, etc. Section 14, Madam Chair, is on page 10, line 1, going to page 10, line 9, and that amends AS 4355025I, and it states that credits under 4355025I can be applied against both the production tax or the corporate income tax, but cannot take that taxpayer's liability below zero. Section 15, Madam Chair, is on page 10, line 10, continues to page 11, line 4, and that amends 4355028E, and that's the oil and gas tax credit fund, and that establishes that pursuant to section 25, this fund will be appealed as of January 1 of 2018, and then any funds that are outstanding will be refunded through general appropriation. It removes the maximum amount per year for a company that they can receive in refunds and makes the conforming changes. It does maintain the company requirements that only a company producing less than 50,000 barrels a day is eligible for a cashable credit. Section 16, Madam Chair, is on page 11, line 5 to page 12, line 2, and that amends AS 4355028G. This is another conforming change to the repeal of the Oil and Gas Tax Credit Fund pursuant to section 25 and carves out the language for the credits that are used against a corporate income tax liability for an LNG, gas storage, oil refinery to conform to the changes found in section 6. Section 17, Madam Chair, is on page 12, line 3, going to page 12, line 19, and this amends 4355028J and 4355028G, and this conforms to the repeal in section 25 as well. Section 18 is on page 12, line 20, to page 13, line 1, and this amends AS 4355029A, and this conforms as well to the repeal of the statutes in section 25, for the net operating loss credit to be specific. Section 19 is on page 13, line 2, going to page 13, line 13, and that amends AS 4355160D, conforming as well to the repeal of the net operating loss credit in section 25. Section 20 is on page 13, line 14, going to page 14, line 5, amending 4355160E to conform to the repeal of the net operating loss credit in section 25, as well as to the change to lease expenditures found in section 21. And that leads to section 21, Madam Chair, page 14, line 6 to page 15, line 7. This amends AS 4355165A, and also as amended by Chapter 4 session laws of 2014 because of the conforming changes to House Bill 247 from last year. It states that for the North Slope only, lease expenditures include those incurred in a previous year that were not deducted in determining production tax value and were not the basis of a credit. Section 22, Madam Chair, is page 15, line 8, continuing to page 15, line 12, and that amends 4355-165F to conform to the repeal of the net operating loss credit in Section 25. Section 23, Madam Chair, is on page 15, line 13, going to page 16, line 17. That adds a new subsection to AS 4355-165. These subsections respectively create an uplift in the amount of 10% compounded annually for 7 years of those lease expenditures. Only companies without commercial production when the expenditure occurred are eligible for the uplift. The increased value or uplift can be applied generally providing that the producer holds interest in the leases on which the expenditure generating the uplift occurred and the leases entered production. That same section, Madam Chair, specifies that current year lease expenditures are to be applied before carry forward lease expenditures when calculating a tax liability. And in applying a carry forward lease expenditure, a producer only needs to apply the amount that would reduce taxes to the equal amount under the minimum tax and not to zero. Carry forward lease expenditures in excess of that amount applied to reduce taxes equal to the amount of the minimum tax are to be carried forward to a future year. Section 24, Madam Chair, is on page 16, line 18 to page 16, line 22, and that amends 4355-170C, a conforming change to the following section that repeals the net operating loss credit. That, Madam Chair, takes the committee to Section 25, beginning on page 16, line 23, going to page 16, line 24, and repeals the net operating loss credit, as well as all relevant sections pursuant to the Oil and Gas Tax Credit Fund, as well as the assignment of tax credit certificates, which have been constructed to third-party access before certification. Section 26, Madam Chair, is on page 16, line 25, continuing to line 30 of the same page, and this is applicability language related to the new ability to apply 025 credits to the corporate income tax liability. Section 27 is on page 16, line 31, continuing to page 17, line 7. This also is applicability language related to the new timelines that were set out in Section 12, giving the Department of Revenue the ability to grant or deny applications that were applied for under 4355025. Section 28, Madam Chair, is on page 17, line 8, going to line 14 of the same page. This is applicability language related to credits used against prior year's production tax liability. Section 29 is on page 17, line 15 to line 19 of the same page, and this is applicability language related to lease expenditures. Section 30 is on page 17, line 20, continuing to line 25 of the same page. This is transition language, Madam Chair, related to the changes in the interest rate, ensuring that the effective date is January 1 of 2018 and no retroactivity is applied to those. Section 31, Madam Chair, is on page 17, line 26, continuing to page 18, line 8, and that's transition language related to carry forward annual losses. Section 32, Madam Chair, is on page 18, line 9, continuing to page 18, line 16. This is transition language related to transferable tax credit certificates. Section 33, Madam Chair, is page 18, line 17, continuing to line 21 of the same page, and that is transition language related to the repeal of the Oil and Gas Tax Credit Fund. Section 34, Madam Chair, is on page 18, line 22 to line 23, and that sets an immediate effective date for sections 2, 7, 9, 11 through 14, and 26 through 28. Section 35, Madam Chair, is on page 18, line 24, continuing to line 25, and that sets an effective date for Section 21 based on the effective date changes made in House Bill 247 of 2016, effectively January 1 of 2018. And, Madam Chair, finally, Section 36 is on line 26 of page 18, continuing to line 27 of page 18, and that sets a January 1, 2018 effective date for all other sections. Those are the changes.
Thank you, Mr. Geolopsis. So with that, I will remove my objection. Is there further objection to adopting the committee substitute? Seeing none, the committee substitute is before the committee. As you have heard, outlined by committee staff, this bill would remove all cashable credits. It does provide for a hard 4% minimum tax floor. It fixes an interest rate. We have heard from our two consultants on aspects of this, and many of their recommendations are encapsulated in this bill. The Senate has consensus around the issue of the need to remove the cashable credit option. We simply can't afford it. So, comments from committee members. Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to just follow up on the cashable credits that you had mentioned. You know, the legislature and the governor have acknowledged that the state's refundable credit program is very unusual. Our own consultant said that it's unique to Alaska, these cashable credits, and it also makes our tax system, our tax program, problematic to implement. So I appreciate the emphasis here on getting rid of the taxable credits. And, you know, it's been an issue for us for some time. The refundable credits have become the third largest line in the general fund budget. You know, when oil was $100 a barrel, it wasn't so noticeable. But when oil's at $45, $50 a barrel, it's very noticeable, and it's a problem to our budget. You know, I think the key, though, is that we need to remember, you know, I've had some people say, cashable credits, we can't afford them anymore. But then I've also heard people say we can't afford not to have them anymore because they've worked. They've been very successful, one of the few programs that has worked exactly the way we wanted it to. For example, the Cook Inlet, 4 or 5 years ago, I was here in the legislature. We were looking at how we're going to import gas to South Central to have plenty of gas to heat our homes where the bulk of the people in Alaska live. And with the cashable credits, we attracted smaller companies to the Cook Inlet, and we've gone from having a shortage of gas in the Cook Inlet now to having a surplus. And the same can be said on the North Slope. We wanted to attract smaller companies to an area in the world that's probably one of the most expensive areas to do oil and gas exploration and production, and that's the North Slope. But it has allowed some smaller companies to get up there. And they've had some successes, some huge successes, actually. So the program has been successful, but we just can't afford to do this anymore. And so what this bill does, this committee substitute for House Bill 111, it puts Alaska on a stable path going forward without the fear of incurring greater liability. I mean, we keep hearing that we got this big liability out there, $600-700 million, whatever it is, and it is a liability, and it is something that we have to address. The governor and Department of Revenue have all acknowledged that we can't afford to keep doing what we're doing. The general public, through some of the testimony and emails that we've been getting, acknowledged that we can't afford to continue with these credits. And the House, you know, in their version of, it's their bill. It's the House bill number 111, also acknowledged that we cannot continue these cashable credits. So we have a consensus on this one issue, but it's a big issue. And so I'm glad to see that we're all together on this. Now, granted, the conversation has changed a little bit from when the House first introduced committee substitute for House Bill 111. You know, they kind of went into some areas that rewrite the whole tax policy, the SB 21 that we worked so hard to get past this body and then to ultimately get past the general public. I don't think that's an area that we want to go to, but we do agree with the House that the taxable credits need some work. So I'm glad this committee substitute refocuses the attention on where it needs to be. And I think that, as I mentioned, we all agree that this is an issue that needs to be fixed, and it needs to be fixed now. So I will be highly supportive of this committee substitute. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Meyer. Further comments? Senator Stedman, did you have any comments? Senator Hughes.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. And I appreciate Senator Meyer's remarks regarding the cashable credits, and I do believe that we struck a balance. You know, we listened to consultants here for I'm not sure how many total hours, and learned a lot about the specifics, the levers, and they did some modeling in advance for us and made some good recommendations. And I believe that you stated that those recommendations, we took those to heart and we included them in this piece of the CS. And I was thinking about in regard to the cashable credits, we took their advice. In regard to the tax piece that the House – oh, and before I go on to say that, I just want to thank the House for their focus on the cashable credits, because I think we all agree that we did, as Senator Meyer stated. But on the tax piece, I was have been concerned as that came over from the House, and it reminded me of a quote of Winston Churchill and amending it a bit for Alaska, trying to tax Alaska into prosperity is like a man standing in a bucket trying to lift himself up by a handle. It doesn't work very well, Madam Chair. And SB 21 does seem to be working, and all along, in fact, since we have been faced with this fiscal crisis, there's been a lot of talk about spending and revenue and all of that, and I think in many ways this committee's been good about understanding, and the CS represents that our focus at this point really should be about getting more oil in taps, that really is should be very prominent in our minds. It should be paramount at this point. And I think we're striking a balance in this bill. And when I think if we were to also, I remember as the consultants laid things out, I realized, first of all, we have a low oil price environment. And secondly, where the taxes were targeted were actually in that per barrel low price range, and that was very concerning to me, and I certainly don't want to be shooting ourselves in the foot. And when I think about the oil industry, and whether you're someone who loves the oil industry or hates the oil industry, one thing we all know is that they have provided billions upon billions of dollars of revenue to this state. They've helped fill our state treasury. The permanent fund is today what it is because of the oil industry. And actually, it's been very essential for many families. It's been their livelihood and has really been a major part of our economy. And so as someone who's always looking at that aspect as right now in this fiscal challenge, what can we do to protect the economy? I don't believe raising taxes it is the right thing to do at all. I believe it'd be of great risk. I believe we would risk less oil in the pipe. I believe that it would risk job decreases for to already struggling companies, and it would risk away basically a system that we have right now that is proving itself that it is working. The SB 21 that the voters, as we all know, also said they support. So I believe as policymakers, it's our responsibility to stick with what we know, and we know that SB 21 is working. And so I'm pleased that the CS does not raise the tax, and I look forward to continuing to focus on how we can ensure more oil is in that. It goes into the pipeline. I'm pleased that we're not our CS is not going to jar our economy. I think that's really important considering we technically are in a recession, and so we must be very cautious. And so I'd like to say too, Madam Chair, we want the explorers to continue exploring, and we want the producers to continue producing. And I think that the balance that we've struck here that addresses the cashable credits but also respects the voters' will when it comes to SB 21, I believe that we're doing the right thing. We're not focusing on the short term, which might mean a little more revenue now, and I think it reminds me of the McDonald's immediate gratification thing. I think we're focusing on the long term through the CS because we are looking and understanding that if exploration continues, production will continue, and that means revenue will continue. And I sit in this seat here, yes, concerned about today and tomorrow, but I'm really here because I'm concerned about my kids and grandkids and that revenue that we've enjoyed in our state treasury that has provided state services, that has caused the permanent fund to grow. And I want that for my children and grandchildren as well. So I do appreciate the balance in the CS, and I do think that we made the right choice by not increasing the tax. So, and I want to thank you and Ike for all your work in that regard. It's been drinking through a fire hose for me, and I appreciate the consultants. They did a very good job providing us input. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Hughes. Senator von Imhoff.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We heard a lot of testimony last week, as Senator Hughes mentioned, and one of the big takeaways for me was for some of the small producers who have generated millions of dollars in cashable tax credits, I feel like they're left hanging. They have bills to pay. There are jobs on the line. This bill is trying to create additional options for those tax credits, where the state is not the only entity paying for these credits. We are looking for a way so that these smaller companies can get cash sooner rather than later, but in a way that does not reduce the oil taxes expected to be paid to the state and therefore does not affect the revenue forecast. How do we do this? Well, with this bill, we feel that we have found a pathway that provides a win-win situation for everybody. So right now, companies can buy tax credits and use for current year or future years. This mechanism remains completely intact in this bill. We are not changing it at all. Instead, what we are doing is we are opening up the market so tax credits can be used for prior years in the event that a company has to amend a previous tax return or pay an assessment issued after an audit is complete. It was never money that the state could have predicted to receive or have created a budget from or ever really counted on. So what does this mean? To me, it's a win-win for everybody. For the small producers, they can get money now with this third-party transferability, make money now to make payroll. They can continue operating and helping to secure a future oil production. I mean, there's a lot of employees that may be out of jobs here shortly, and we need to address that. This is very important. The purchasing companies, the companies who purchase the tax credits can use the tax credit on past taxes that they might unexpectedly owe during an audit or an amended return, but, here's the caveat, they can use the credit as long as they don't appeal or litigate the tax decision. They have to accept the ruling, use the tax credit, and move on. The state benefits because they reduce the likelihood of expensive and time-consuming disputes, and the state gets a second wind in my book because we reduce the amount of the backlog tax credit and that are waiting to be cashed out. So to me, this bill does many things, but what I'm focusing on is that I believe it's a reasonable compromise to address over the $200 million in cashable tax credits that have been earned that are sitting there in limbo. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator von Imhoff. Senator Coghill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It looks like the CS answers the question, how do you retain value the best you can for those who have already invested in Alaska that we made an agreement with that finds a way in a cash-strapped world that we can actually retain that value. And for those up in my neck of the woods who are doing their dead-level best to try to find local opportunities and extraction, this gives them a way to do it. A way to retain value that we set up an expectation for, whether on the North Slope or in the Kenai Field. So for that, I think this is a good move. We heard very loud and clear that cashable credits and how to get the best value out of your losses is very, very important. So I think we addressed that very well here. We did not address the complexity of our tax system, and quite frankly, that's probably going to be an ongoing conversation for some time. But this does deal with how do we retain value for those who have invested and for us in Alaska as we kind of add to that value. So I'm appreciative of the simplicity and the kind of the way we've artfully gone through this. So I'm going to be supporting the bill, and I'd probably make a motion anytime you're ready.
Thank you, Senator Coghill. I'm ready for that motion. Senator Stedman.
Before we rush to the altar here. I'm not quite sure looking at the bill. I guess one of the concerns I have is the removal of the tax credit fund and the requirement that the state has to make a minimum payment dealing with the outstanding. And we've heard testimony that we might have outstanding up to $1 billion or even $1.1 billion or some number, substantially higher than small numbers. And I'm not quite sure how that's going to work with the bill. Currently, we have a minimum requirement that we have to make, so a lender will always know he's going to get some funds back on the debt outstanding. And I'm just wondering if we can get some comments on how that's perceived. Personally, I don't want to see the legislature go into the permanent fund to pay off that liability. I think that'd be a political disaster with a lot of repercussions, but we need to work through how to get that obligation off our books. So I was wondering what the thought is, or how the implications of removing that minimum payment might adversely affect the lenders.
Senator Stedman, this bill provides an opportunity to begin the process of taking that liability off our books. It will not solve the problem tomorrow or even next year, but it will begin that process. The bill will go to the Senate Finance Committee next, and that would be an arena in which perhaps an additional creative solution will come forward. But this begins the process of removing that liability. Did you have further comments?
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't think that quite answers the question. So at the Finance Committee, I think it would be nice if there's a couple people on here. We need to have some conversation with the folks that have the outstanding debts and how this might impact them. I don't think it doesn't appear to be a hold harmless. Getting a guaranteed minimum payment if you're a lender is better than no guarantee at all. And if it's a subject to a veto, we could put them in a position where they'd have zero payment. So anyway, I'm just kind of curious on the mechanics of that. So I think that's an area that the next committee referral can take a look at how to deal with that. Some of the other issues that were brought up, the GVR issue and the complexity with that, the per barrel deduction and the mathematical complexity of that, I think is best left for a later day. But clearly there's some mechanical irregularities within our structure that creates some complexities that I think are advantageous to the state, quite frankly, in our ability to have transparency and predictability. So I think we need to take a look at that at some time. And as we move forward and work through these, like this cash flow credit, which is virtually an anomaly worldwide, I think there's testimony that there's only one other sovereign that has it. Nobody does it this way, and that's why we're here today, because it doesn't work. There's other mechanisms that would allow the industry to recoup their costs, which is standard procedure worldwide, and which is the NOL with the or the carry forward with the uplift. So I would be hesitant personally to say that Senate Bill 21 is a success when its major components are structurally flawed, and we've been in the process of changing them with a couple more large sections still yet to come. That's it. I'm sure.
Thank you, Senator Stedman. Senator Coghill, do you have a motion?
Madam Chair, I move that we move this CS, the Senate CS for House Bill 111, version PAPA with individual recommendations and the forthcoming fiscal notes.
Is there objection to moving the bill? Hearing none, the bill will move from committee. As the document is being passed around for signature, I just want to make a few closing comments. This Senate committee substitute focuses on the important issues around which there is consensus in the Senate. We actually began work on the tax credit issue back in 2015 when we convened a Senate tax credit working group. It was a bipartisan group, had members of resources and finance on it, one of which was a member of this committee as well as myself. We had industry, native corporations, and labor unions, all part of that working group. The outcome were recommendations, one of which was facing the tax credits, fixing the cashability of those credits. And we are today implementing the next step in that. The work actually began last year in House Bill 247. That was when we established a countdown to the elimination of the Cook Inlet credits. We recognized that Cook Inlet was a constrained market and that having credits, cash credits by government was distorting the competition. So we began that countdown, and that is continuing in process right now. The governor's veto of the earned cashable credits in 2015 and 2016 amplified the issue. And today, this committee substitute completes the work of addressing that cash exposure by eliminating cash credits going forward. So the Senate has looked at this whole topic in basically three buckets, three separate topics. First of all, those unpaid cashable credits. It is a liability that's hanging out there. This CS allows a more flexible use of those credits at no present cost to the state's general fund. It will open the door to a variety of uses of those to reduce the backlog. That's a good thing. The second bucket that we're dealing with in this bill is protecting the state from future cash calls, and that's the main body of the work in this bill. These are cash credits we can no longer afford. So it repeals the cash credit fund completely so that no legislator can come up with a new idea for a cashable credit. The fund is gone. It moves the net operating losses from a deduction and, excuse me, from being a credit to a deduction, which does change the tax liability, but it takes away the cash liability, the cash exposure for the state. It does preserve 100% of the value of those carry forward losses, and we heard from both of our consultants that that is a critical issue, because to remove that ability of 100% value in those carry forward losses would put us at the bottom of the competitiveness ladder. We heard that from consultants. It incorporates a non-cash uplift to for new companies to respect the time value of money in their investment. So as they carry forward the losses, as they're developing a project, they get some uplift for those expenditures going forward. It preserves Middle Earth, gives them an opportunity to use their credits in a valuable way for them, again, non-cash support from the state. It allows the natural expiration of the refinery and gas storage related credits. They will be credited, they will be paid by appropriation only. So the legislature will have conscious understanding of paying those credits. The changes in this CS are profound, and industry will be impacted. But industry has also acknowledged their awareness that the state cannot afford these cashable credits anymore. And lastly, the third bucket the Senate has been focused on is allowing our current tax policy to continue to be implemented. We have seen an increase in production, a dramatic increase in production. That means more royalty to the state as well. This bill hardens the floor. That was one of the policies we set forth in Senate Bill 21, and it needed clarification. It is clarified in this bill. The minimum tax floor is still flexible for new and small producers. The sliding scale per barrel reduction is still preserved. That was put into our tax policy, recognizing the high royalty structure that we have, and that helps offset that high royalty. We are hardening the minimum floor, and that will benefit the state and benefit for us, but also allows full recovery of losses for the companies. So we have consensus in the Senate that it is time to deal with these cashable credits. We have worked to establish a bill, a policy that is fair, continues to encourage new production. It is balanced. That is to say, it does not carve out special recognition for certain companies. It is balanced in terms of all areas of the state. And it is a path forward without cashable credits. It is the way to end the cash credits. Rather than simply vetoing them, we are now making a clear policy, and we believe that this is the best way forward. We've heard public testimony, not only from the industry, but from the public themselves. This is in the best interest of Alaska's families, businesses, and jobs. But let me be clear about something. This new policy does increase the total tax that will be paid by the oil industry, but it also protects their businesses by allowing 100% deductibility of their losses. So it provides that other important piece, the process and eventual payment of the unpaid cash credits. So with that, thank you, committee members. I appreciate all of your input into the bill. As you've listened to all of our consultants and weighed out the issues. And so with that concludes our meeting for today. We stand adjourned. Let the record reflect the time is 2:41 p.m.